Fantastic. Good morning, and I'm certainly pleased to be here. It is a little bit interesting for me because I'm a soil scientist. I work in the area of soil microbiology, and nonwovens is certainly not my area of expertise, but fortunately I've had the opportunity to work with Dr. Warnock, who is providing that area of expertise. It's also somewhat intimidating this morning in that I have one of my associates that I worked with a number of years ago. We shared a few days when it was about 112, 15 degrees, right? We were digging holes in the field, so it is truly an interesting morning. Today I want to talk with you a little bit about using a kinetic approach to look at biodegradation rates of some cellulosic materials. Dr. Warnock was working in this area, and as a soil microbiologist, we do microbial ecology type work. We decompose things, and so the impetus for this was the fact that we have a rather substantial amount of textile waste that's going in our waste stream into landfills, and it's been estimated by EPA that this number, if you go through the calculations, amounts to about 70 pounds per person per year, which seems inordinate to me. I've seen other estimates that are a bit lower than that, like about 10 pounds per person per year. But still, that's a rather significant amount of material going into our landfills. So if we can look at some alternative methods, we can divert that from our landfill. The other aspect of this that was quite interesting to me is the fact that looking at degradation rate of some of these fabrics in soil has applications in taphonomy. And I'm not sure what that word meant. I after Googling it in Wikipedia, the idea of looking at the rate at which textiles decompose in soil is used in forensic investigations to give you some idea of how long this material had been buried. So we've got a couple of applications of that, and that led us to our objective of conducting a field study to look at the biodegradation rates of rayon cotton and tinsel fabrics buried in soil. A couple of things interesting about this: it is a field study, it's not a lab study. We actually went to the real world, which is always somewhat challenging, and we were looking at these cellulosic materials. Obviously, in soil, we have a lot of cellulose that's added to soil. It's the most common material in terms of plant residues. So we had some background, some experience with that. The soil that we chose, of course, was one at the research station close to the campus, which is a Captina soil. For the soils people, that means something. Suffice it to say, it's a medium textured soil. It's a silt loam, has good drainage properties, had sufficient levels of nutrients and low organic matter content, which meant that the carbon that we add, i.e. the fabric, is going to be certainly available for the microbial community to use. The fabrics that we were working with had different contents of the amorphous cellulose material that we were interested in, the degree of polymerization. Rayon is about 70% amorphous, cotton about 30%, and then, of course, the tinsel is a highly crystalline material. So we had these three fabrics that we were adding to the soil. We cut these into 25 by 25 centimeter squares. We buried these in the soil in tulle, which is, if you're not familiar with that, it's like bridal veil. The reason we wanted that is it gave us free access for the soil environment, but it allowed us to hopefully recover our samples when we were trying to determine the amount of material that was remaining. We buried these in the soil at a depth of about 10 centimeters, well, not about, it was 10 centimeters, and they were oriented parallel to the soil surface. So we set this up by going in and tilling the soil to a depth of 15 centimeters, and then we leveled it and got a uniform surface. We applied the material. The tool is the fabric, or the material that we used to contain the fabrics, and we buried this at a depth of 10 centimeters, carefully restored the soil to it, raked this down, got it uniform, and then we put in an irrigation system that allowed us to maintain the moisture conditions. So we had no vegetation in this area. We any vegetation that appeared, we controlled with Roundup. We kept it reasonably consistent in terms of the moisture potential, and then periodically we would go in and remove samples, collect them for our analysis. We did this at 14, 28, 42, 77, 112 days. We did five reps of each of the material, and we had the initial weight of each particular piece of sample before it was buried in the soil. Once we excavated these samples, we carefully removed the soil particles, lightly brushed them, dried the sample to a constant weight at 55 degrees C. Then we collected a subsample of that and burned it, ashed it at 650 degrees because we wanted to eliminate the soil particle factor in our mass determination. So all these weights are reported on a dry, ash-free basis. And then, of course, the statistical design was a split pot, which we were using five replications, and the burial time was the split pot factor. If I could say that, split plot factor. There we go. This is a plot of fabric recovered versus time, and each one of each one of the data points that you're seeing is a mean of five replications. And as you can see, we started at the initial of 100%. By 14 days, we started to see separation, 28 days, 42 days. And for rayon, at 77 days, we were unable to recover any particular sample. The cotton dropped rather dramatically after our 77-day sample, and of course the tencel was moving relatively linear. Now, if you look at that, the interesting aspect of it is that we're seeing a relatively consistent decomposition or biodegradation rate of the particular fabrics. When we collected the samples, they were quite dramatically different. If you, on the lower left-hand side, you're looking at the cotton sample at 28 days, and the top right, you're looking at a rayon sample at 14 days. So a relatively rapid decomposition of that cellulose. Now, cellulose, as I said, is a relatively common substrate for soil microorganism, being that polymer of glucose. It's a large molecule that cannot be taken into the microorganism. So extracellular enzymes, the cellulases, cellulase complex, hydrolyzes that into 2 and 3 glucose units and produces cellobiose or the triose type compound. Once you get that 2 glucose unit, such as the cellobiose, then this material can be transported into the cell, and certainly the enzyme for the hydrolysis of that is relatively common, converts it to glucose, and of course it can go through the normal glycolytic and TCA pathways under aerobic conditions, and we get CO2 and water, new microbes, some energy. Life is good. We like that. There are a whole host of organisms that can carry this out in soil. From fungi, just some of the most common ones are Trichoderma, Aspergillus, Penicillium. These are all very, very common soil fungi. In fact, at one time, I had a student working with some Trichoderma, he had collected his specimen and grown it and was going to harvest the biomass and filter it, and so he poured it into a filter paper. It was late in the day, so he went home and came back the next morning. The filter paper was gone. The organism was that active in terms of cellulose degradation. That's not common of all of them, but obviously they have the capability. And of course, from a bacterial standpoint, very common soil isolates, Bacillus being a gram positive one that was particularly common in this soil, Pseudomonas, and of course the Streptomyces are very common soil organisms. Now, a number of people have looked at decomposition of materials in soil. Some of them have made more empirical observations in that describing degradation as it was there was degradation after a month, or it was severely deteriorated after 5 months. Obviously, that describes what happened, but what we were trying to do was describe this a little more carefully. Kaplan's paper back in 70 said that this was related to the amount of crystalline cellulose in the fabric, and that as we increase the amount of amorphous cellulose, then we increase the biodegradation rate. And that was certainly consistent with the results that we found. Baskin and Kaplan did an extensive analysis of some degradation work using data transformations and basically kerr-fitting techniques to describe the degradation rate, which was quite helpful. But what we were after was trying to use a more kinetic approach. And so after looking at the data and seeing the degradation rate being relatively consistent with time, that would fit a zero order type degradation kinetics. At first, we tried to fit it to first order, and that did not work well. So the zero order approach is described as the amount of material at some time t is equal to the initial amount up here, a zero minus the rate constant times time. And this is very commonly used in describing some of our kinetic transform. Now, this is the data presented in a percent fabric recovered versus time for the three fabrics that we were investigating. As you can see, for TinCell, we actually had 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 data points. We elected not to put time zero in because those were all obviously going to force it through 100 since that's what they were. With cotton, because at 77 days we were out of sample, we only have 4 data points, and for rayon we only have 3. Each one of those data points is a mean of 5 separate determinations. So there's a rather significant database to go into that. When you look at the coefficient of determination for these curves, they were all above 0.97. Doing that and looking at the slope, which is the rate constant, then you can come up with rate constants for the three fabrics that are about half as you move from rayon to cotton and about half again as you move from cotton to TinCell. In other words, the rayon is rapidly degraded, cotton slower, and TinCell even slower. Looking at the statistical analysis, as you can see, we were then 5 to 10%. So those numbers are there's a good fit. That's about the simplest way of stating it. And there was a significant difference between the three values. Now, once we have that rate constant, we can calculate a half-life value, which is the time required for 50% of that material to disappear. And that is simply the initial amount divided by 2 times the rate constant. And since we just determined the rate constant, we can calculate half-life values. So for something like rayon, we add that material, and after 22 days, half of it's gone. After 22 additional days, there would be a quarter of it left, and so on and so on. Cotton, after 40 days, half of it was gone. After 80 days, there would be about a quarter of it left. And for the TinCell, it's about 100 days. So that gave us at least some estimate of the degradation rate. And again, the estimate, standard error of the estimate, was quite good. In some recent publication, Withington and Stanford reported that the degradation of these cotton strips, buried cotton strips in soil, was reported to be influenced by soil temperature and moisture. And that's certainly not unexpected, that those are usually the two main driving factors in microbial activity in many soil systems. If you look at data from our study, and this is some we conducted this from July through November, but if you look at the mean temperature versus max and min air temperature, we were relatively consistent way out here during our experiment. So for a field study, we had a relatively consistent temperature, which is sort of unusual, at least in most of my experiences. It seems like, you know, lightning will hit the plots or something will happen. But in this case, we're relatively consistent. We maintain moisture through irrigation, so we gave it basically optimal conditions. The average over the time period there is somewhere around 25 degrees C, which is certainly acceptable if you're a soil microbe. Gilmore is a soil microbiologist, biochemist, that has done a lot of work in transformations also. And he was developing some relationships for degradation that he was able to go into the NOAA database and look at temperature and moisture and do correction factors for these rate constants. Okay, so the bottom line here is that if you measure a rate constant for a particular reaction in soil, that's fine for where you are when you are. If you want to apply that somewhere else or at some other time, assuming you don't have just a totally constant environment, you've got different temperature and different moisture. And so there are some very standard relationships that would allow you to make those adjustments, those corrections. The Arrhenius equation is used extensively in a lot of chemical transformations. And with Gilmore's database of 123 data sets or something. It was quite extensive, looking at cellulose and some other factors over the temperature range of 10 to 40 degrees C. He was able to adapt that Arrhenius equation and to use precipitation and pan evaporation, which if you're not a meteorology person, that may not mean much to you. But there are a whole host of these NOAA stations throughout the country that have this sort of information and allow you then to take those bits of information and make corrections. Here's an idea. Here's some calculations we did looking at the influence of temperature on the rate constant. In this case, we actually calculated out the half-life to make it about a little easier comparison. These are the numbers from our particular study. In other words, under optimal moisture, third bar, field capacity, whatever term you want to use. At 25 degrees C, we had a half-life around of about 22 days, 40 days for cotton, and about 94 days for tencel. If you lower that temperature and use the correction factor for that Arrhenius equation, that number goes up to about 38, to about 80, and to about 190. In other words, a dramatic impact of temperature. You cool it down, and you slow down the reaction. Conversely, crank the temperature up, you drop the half-life in half, within 10 days, it's gone. Okay, half of it is gone, I should say. What's your terminology, Wolf? All right. Now, if you look at the other factor as moisture being a dominant factor, under a situation of optimal temperature, again, this is the data from our experiment, or these are the data, at optimal moisture, and that may not mean anything to you, but that would be the moisture content in the soil. Say it rained and you waited about 2 days, okay, and it drained, it would be nice and moist. Some people would call it field capacity, third bar. Those are terms that are commonly used. The kilopascal minus 33 kilopascal would be the term that we would use from a biological standpoint. As you increase the negativity, I hate that way of stating it, but as this number becomes a negative value, okay, that means it's drier. Okay, this is starting to dry out. This is starting to get really dry. When it gets to about minus 1500, plants can no longer live. Okay, so you're in a dry range now. If you're familiar with percent water by weight, this would be about 18% in our silt loam soil. This would go probably about 11%, and this would be down about 8 or 9%. Okay, but that number changes depending on texture. If it's a clay soil, then it may be 35% to get this minus 33 kilopascals. I'm not trying to do a soil physics thing, but what I'm saying is this gives you an idea. You dry the soil out and it slows it down. Half-life gets longer, but it's not as dramatic as temperature. Temperature is a more overwhelming driving force. Now, put them together, temperature and moisture, and you can really mess with the system. Okay, here was the field study, relatively constant, 25, optimal moisture. Cool it down, make it dry. Okay, and as you can see, we are doubling the half-life. Warm it up, dry it down, and it still reduces it, but not to the level that it was. So temperature is a more critical factor, at least in this correction factor, than moisture. conclusions. Certainly, it's not unexpected that if you put cellulose in a warm, moist soil situation, you would expect it to break down. Okay, soil organisms are good at breaking down cellulose. And in the fabrics that we were looking at, rayon certainly was degraded faster than cotton, which was degraded faster than Tencel. Zero order kinetics, we were able to use that. That gives you a kinetic basis for, to look at some of these methods of expanding the data by using correction factors so that you can take data from this and you can go to San Diego or Minnesota or Southern Florida or Washington, Seattle, and do the calculations that would allow you to make those adjustments. What this does imply is that there, and we do a lot of land farming in projects that I work in. When Wes and I were working in oil spills, we were basically looking at crude oil and we were farming it. Okay, we were land applying it, mixing it up, and we were increasing its degradation rate. We do that with biosolids, sewage sludge. The idea of plowing up a lot of spent, non-woven cotton material in a land farm, rather than sending it to a landfill, it should break down. You should be able to manage that system. Now, I have this vision of a big tractor out here with a disc, you know, going through a pile of non-woven fabrics, incorporating them into the soil. I don't know. Interesting. The second part is that there are forensic applications for this, and I've been sort of impressed at the wide range of studies that have been conducted where they've looked at degradation rate of a whole host of different fabrics under different environmental conditions. It becomes somewhat graphic. They seem to be, in this whole area, a lot of researchers like to publish these photographs that are sometimes quite disconcerting, maybe would be the word. I mean, you know, so anyway, that's it. But that was the aspect that we were concerned about. I think we can broaden this as a way to, we can use this as a way to alternative waste method, and then for that aspect of the forensic. Okay, thank you.